The Conference Committee on Transportation will come to order. Today what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of the identical provisions and adopt some of that language, and then we're going to talk about some of the smaller technical differences in the bill and hopefully come to some resolve on that. Chairman Leader is going to be running the meeting on Saturday, and the time is yet to be announced. I think the Senate is lobbying for 6 a.m. Is that? Well, maybe not. But anyway, there is going to be a meeting on Saturday, and you know, if everybody could kind of let Bernie know what their preferred time is, that would be appreciated. That's for the members. I mean, everybody else is going to be here anyway, right, Bob? Okay. with that, I'm going to ask Ms. Pierzowski to, and members, you should have a page that says transportation finance identical provisions on it. Okay. And Ms. Pierzowski will work off that and explain what they are, and we'll take them one at a time and adopt them. Oh, and if we could turn off all the cell phones after I got mine off. So. Ms. Pierzowski.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll be ready in 1 second here. Okay. Ms. Boyd and I put together this one-page document with identical provisions and then a few provisions with merely technical differences. So the identical provisions, and I'll say we did not try to identify identical provisions in the appropriations section because on the assumption that the appropriations will be changing and the rider language may change along with the numbers, so we thought we'd better leave that for another time. Okay, referring to the document then, the first identical provision is the vehicle registration tax changes that are found on R31 to 33. Those are identical, word for word. And I don't know if you want us to review what's in the provisions or just identify them.
Just identify them would be good, Ms. Pierzowski. I think everybody knows the crux.
Did you want me to go through the whole list then?
We'll take them one at a time.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that revision. We're taking, you want a Senate file reference or the House file reference? Either one, or revisor reference?
The revisor, why don't we go with the revisor number?
Mr. Chair, that's actually the House revisor and the Senate revisor, too, so we got the. But if we take one.
Just take the House file.
The House revisor number?
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move. Revisor number R31 to 33, which changes the vehicle registration tax.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Pierzowski?
Mr. Chair, on R50, there are two identical sections, and there's a reference in there to county wheelage tax. They're both references to county wheelage tax due to the change in the wheelage tax that's being proposed in these bills. Just conforming language changes, no policy change.
I'll move them all. Just for the members of the House, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. For the House conferees, too, you feel free to move any of them. I'm just looking at them. I do move them. So
you're doing well.
I don't have to move them all, you know.
Representative Leader moves the language revisor number, House number R50. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Pierzowski.
Mr. Chair, on R78 is a repealer, and the Senate identical provision is actually on R42, but on R78, you can see a statutory repealer. It repeals the transit assistance program and the associated unused transit assistance fund, because the new transit assistance public transit assistance fund is being created in connection with the MVES transfer. This one is no longer needed.
All right. Representative Leader moves the language on House Side R-78. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Berzoski?
Mr. Chair, the remainder of the identical provisions, I believe, all come from the article on Department of Public Safety fees. And these were governor's recommendations, and they were passed identically by both houses. The first is a 75-cent fee increase for vehicle titles and duplicate titles on R-8283.
All right. Ms. Berzoski, we're just going to take these as one motion then. So Representative Leader moves the like provisions relating to the vehicle title fees on R-82 through 83, 83 through 84, 84 through 86, 86, 87, 87 through 88, and R-88. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Ms. Berzoski, let's move down to the technical differences.
Mr. Chair, the first one is on R-31, and by technical differences, we mean that they achieve exactly the same outcome, but just use different language or have different numbering systems or whatever. The first is the establishes the Transit Assistance Fund and account. This is in connection with the MVES transfer. The differences are just technical. Actually, the Senate side also references the statute with the motor vehicle lease sales tax, so that piece would have to wait until that issue is decided. But otherwise, the differences are just technical.
Okay, and Representative Leader would move the House language in relation to R-31 and the Transit Assistance Fund. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
So then if and when we get to the lease tax and and we do include, there'd be an opportunity to make an amendment. So
you have to open that.
All right.
Right. Well, we'll open that section back up.
All right.
I think that that's one of the issues. And in regards to the lease tax, that's one of the issues that's still remaining out there. And I believe leadership needs to make a decision on that before we can either put it in the bill or leave it on the cutting room floor. But I would hope that the House members would lobby their leadership extensively to get this, because I think that that leased vehicle tax money has the opportunity, you know, it has a potential of being a way to tie all this up and get it all together. So it's a lot easier to put a bill together if you've got a few extra $1 million to move around.
Representative Hornstein is presenting a bill in Ways and Means, so he'll be here.
Okay, great. All in favor of the House language in relationship to R-31, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Ms. Berzoski?
Mr. Chair, I need to skip over the next one because it's embedded, I realize, in another situation that we're going to discuss later, I think.
Okay.
Okay, so starting with R-23 and all the way down to R-88, those are just merely different ways of expressing statutes of limitations, just technical difference between House and Senate.
And Ms. Berzoski, you can, I tell you what, why don't we just direct you and House Counsel to figure out the appropriate way of putting that together, and the next meeting we'll adopt those as well.
Okay.
Members, those are normally just such small changes, and it's kind of wordsmithing, and we'll let the attorneys take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
Members, we're going to get some copies made of another document and then work off of that for a few minutes. There are items that are fairly similar, but there's some language differences, and we want to make sure that everybody's on the same page here. We'll get those copies made and get them passed out. In the meantime, we'll start Okay, Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, we have a few policy differences here that we've pulled out and tried to prepare for. The first has to do, it's in Article 1, in the general, it has to do with general contingent accounts and contingent appropriations. And in the Transportation Appropriations Bill, there is typically language that authorizes the expenditure of contingent accounts or unanticipated receipts of funds. And if that occurs typically during the interim, the Commissioner of Transportation would request authority to spend the money. The governor would consult with the Legislative Advisory Commission, and then that money could be expended. The House bill has the language that I think we have carried forward pretty much from one bill to the next, and the Senate this year has changed that language. When the document is copied, it will have references to the specific language in the House and Senate files. The language relates, first of all, it makes a general contingent appropriation to the airports fund of $50,000 a year, the trunk highway fund of $200,000 a year, and the highway user fund $125,000 a year that can be spent only with approval. Then there's also, as I said, a provision for unanticipated receipt of funds. So the current procedure is that the governor consults with the Legislative Advisory Commission. The members of the commission are the Senate Majority Leader or designee, the Senate Finance Committee Chair, the Senate Chair of the relevant division, so transportation in the case of a transportation expenditure, the Speaker of the House or designee, the House Ways and Means Chair, and the House Chair of the relevant budget committee or division. Okay, so that sort of sets the stage, hopefully. And then the different approaches, first of all, the House and Senate have different approval of expenditure of these contingent appropriations. The House says the governor has to approve it after consultation with or review by the LAC, the Legislative Advisory Commission. The Senate requires the governor's approval after written approval of the LAC plus the ranking minority members of the Senate and House Transportation Committee. So House requires just consultation with the legislature. Senate requires written approval of the legislature and includes the minority members of the committee. And then there's also one other difference. The House does not, the Senate added language to prohibit MnDOT's use of contingent appropriations to increase the use of federal advanced construction funding beyond specific authorizations. The House does not have that limitation. So those are the different approaches.
And members, you can find that language on R32 of the side-by-side. I think one of the reasons that the Senate went in this direction is it appeared that during this past interim there was some money that needed to be moved around, and maybe the commissioner I'm sorry, R21. Anyway, there was an instance this past year where we had to make some allowances so this money could be spent. It was, and I can't off the top of my head recall all of the reasons behind it. Maybe Commissioner or Mr. McFarland or Ms. Parker, maybe you can come and help us as to what we were doing this past year when we did that. If I thought my memory was a little fuzzy. I see Mr. McFarland still going, what's he talking about? So. Mr. McFarland.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob McFarland with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, assistant to the commissioner. Mine is not crystal clear. I was looking for members of our finance staff here, and they're still traveling to the Capitol. We had funds available unappropriated. Is it working, Mr. Chair? Mm-hmm. Over the summer, we had funds available that were unappropriated funds and projects that for which those funds were designated, projects throughout the state. So we were seeking, we had actually asked for those funds to be appropriated during the 2006 legislative session. They were not under those circumstances. And so we did go through a request through the LAC process to have those monies appropriated. And I'm looking for some help here. I believe it was in the range of $80 million. So we went through the process of the Legislative Advisory Commission to seek approval and consult to have those dollars appropriated so they could be spent on the projects for which they were designated. Plus that amount of money was also important to have that appropriation on the books for us to be able to pursue the bidding the letting of the Crosstown project. Okay. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McFarland, the LAC doesn't meet, you know, on a regular schedule. Is that a problem then, waiting for it? Nothing comes up that quickly that you wouldn't know within the time the LAC meets, is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in this case, and I think in previous cases, what the Department of Finance and the Governor's Office has done is they've gone to the individual members of the LAC to consult with them and provide them information on that request. And it's a letter process and a form process that, as I understand it, that the LAC members can sign for their consent of the request. And if they have, thank you, and if they have a concern about the request, they can seek a hearing on the item rather than simply authorizing the request. So the fact that they do not meet has not, to my understanding of this process, been a barrier to going through the process and giving the necessary approvals.
Yeah, and members, this is not a process by which the legislature approves, you know, the people that Mr. McFarland was talking about that signs off on it. What we sign off on is basically just saying, yeah, the department talked with us, and but right now it's not contingent upon our approval to spend this money. And so, like in this case, it was roughly $80 million, like 82 or something. I forget the exact number. But so in this process that we have currently, there's like about five or six members of the whole legislature that gets involved in it and actually knows what's going on. And these are times when we're not meeting in session. There's a decision that has to be made, and it's basically a notification that the department is moving money from one place to another. We feel that should be that those signatures that are put on the paper, those people should be held accountable because we are the elected officials. MnDOT's the lieutenant governor's elected, but that's for a different position, not as commissioner. But the folks that work for the department are not elected people, and we feel that we're responsible for that money, even if it was $82,000. We feel that would be our responsibility. And there's a lot of these times when that money has to be moved around. Mr. McFarland gave the example of we want to kick off the crosstown and get that going. So I think it was myself and Senator Johnson and Speaker Swigum Mary Liz and Representative Holberg signed off on the paper. But we're looking for something that that has a little more accountability to it. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is for Mr. McFarland. Was this process used to get the money from the Devil's Triangle project to be transferred over to the Crosstown project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Horton, no. They're unrelated in that sense. I mean, the Devil's Triangle project money certainly related to the Crosstown project, but it's not related to this LAC request, which is simply a financial transfer of money and then allowing it to be spent.
If I could follow up, mm-hmm. Is the reason that the LAC process didn't need to be used is that both the Devil's Triangle appropriation and the Crosstown were both coming out of the same account at MnDOT, so you didn't need to get confirmation with LAC on moving money within the account, to another purpose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Horkman, the programming decisions within the Trunk Highway Fund within the appropriated balances are not subject to, the changes in that process are not subject to LAC review.
So just my final follow-up is this would only come into play when you're moving something from one type of account to another?
Or if there is if you want to move money and then have it appropriated within a different account, or if you have additional funding, where this usually comes into place is where there is more money in the Trunk Highway Fund for some purpose, either increased receipts, increased federal funds for some reason, some reason where you have money that you would like to spend on projects, usually in the state Trunk Highway Construction Program, that you don't have legislative authority to spend. So you've got money. You've got projects, you want to spend it, it's in between legislative periods, and you want to get the money out the door. That's when this usually occurs, and it usually occurs with smaller amounts of money than we were dealing with over this past summer. You have to remember, in this particular case, we had recognized that this appropriation level was going to be short, that this money was going to be available to us prior to the 2006 legislative session, and it was in a legislative proposal that did not get acted on or heard. And so when it went into the summer and there were projects in the balance, not just Crosstown, but a number of projects all across the state that were counting on this money, we went the LAC route.
Right. And Representative Horton, if you look on page R22, about halfway down on 11.8, it starts kind of listing what the what those appropriations are for, and it just says trunk highway design, construction, or inspection in order to take advantage of unanticipated receipt of income to the Trunk Highway Fund or take advantage of federally advanced construction funding for trunk highway maintenance in order to meet an emergency or to pay some tort or environmental claim. So that's the purpose of the money, the use of the money. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, is the tab more money, is that part of the, this moving from the money the tab board gave you, $50 million, where the cross down, not nothing to do with this. What is the source of the money that we're moving around? Several places?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, that's where I was hoping to get our finance people who are not. Oh, Kevin, hold on up, please. If I may, Mr. Chairman, and invite Mr. Gray up.
Well, it's always a good day when we can pick on Mr. Gray a little bit. So. Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair and members, my timing is always good. The LAC is not about moving money around at all. It's about recognizing available revenues that could be appropriated. So it's about an appropriation of spending in, request. And it's the unanticipated revenue or the timing of revenue in the future that we were able to recognize in 07, specifically for the Crosstown project that was the mainstay of why we wanted the LAC request. In addition, a portion of the request was for high priority projects, which came in at a much higher level than we anticipated when we had developed the budget in our SRC spending program originally. So there was also a significant portion of the dollars, almost half of them, were for spending authority to begin work on high priority projects.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Gray, I think Representative Earhart was asking where did this money come from?
Chair Murphy and members, it came from revenues that we anticipated recognizing in fiscal 08 and that were actually available in 07, including high priority project funding that was again at a higher level than we had planned when we developed the original budget.
Okay. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand this because this is somewhat new to me. The unanticipated revenue only addresses one of the three possible uses here. We also have emergencies that are listed here. That money would come from unappropriated funds that would remain.
Chair Murphy, members, the use of the LAC is a limited tool. It should be an occasional purpose and for kind of a higher calling. And of course, we felt that the Crosstown project indeed fell into that bailiwick. The emergency funding would be for something. I think in the past, as I recall, we might have used the LAC process I think the LAC process, for instance, when we had an extremely heavy winter, the 91, where we had $50 million of expenditures, we'd only planned for 25. The money that, in that nature, whether that's an accurate example or not, but that would come out of our trunk highway fund balance and would reduce our capacity for future spending. But that would be an emergency appropriation example, I think. We haven't used it recently or even under my tenure, but that's the example that comes to mind.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just remind us who the legislative, maybe it's already been said, but who is the Legislative Advisory Commission who serves on that?
Mr. Zosky.
Mr. Chair, it's actually written on this this handout. It's the Senate Majority Leader, the Senate Finance Committee Chair, the Senate Chair of the relevant division for the particular request, and then the Speaker of the House Ways and Means Chair, and the House Chair of the relevant division.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, that is that's number one of about the, about five or six that we're going to go through. And we don't have to vote on this right now, but as long as the, we'll let the House members get a little chance to mull through this, and since your language is basically what we currently do, then we've got an idea what your guys' thoughts are on that, so... Representative Leader? Okay.
I'm just going to move it.
Oh, you're going to move it. Well,
unless...
Okay. Well, if you want to move that language, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the language that I refer to by line or just to...
Mr.
Actually, I could just say in the general contingency account.
The reference is current.
Okay, the reference is right on the top here.
For both Senate and House.
Yeah. I'd move the Senate language, actually, in R21-16.7 to 16.25. Or is it 10.31 to 11.25? That's both of them, Mr. Chair.
Right. It's the Senate language on R21, lines 16.7 through 16.25, and the Senate language on R22, 10.31 through 11.25. On the Senator Dable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the motion. But I had another idea.
okay.
That I can bring up later. Something I'd like to add to this idea is that perhaps in time for the start of the subsequent session, that somehow or another this action be communicated to the rest of the members of each committee and each body. I think we should be aware that this has occurred in some formal fashion. So we direct the Department of Transportation to send a letter that ends up in our inbox, you know, that we get to read the first day of session or something like that, or maybe even as it occurs concurrently, you know, because we do receive our mail even in the interim, just so we're aware.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I will say is Mr. Gray and Mr. McFarland did a good job of tracking me down and making sure that everything went off without a hitch. And in that area, I think it would be the responsibility of the chair of the committees to make sure that not only their committee members, but the rest of the legislators were tuned in. And if the House doesn't mind, we'll work up a little language to say that, and we'll let Senator Dibble offer it up at the next meeting.
Okay. I'll work with the Senate Council to get some language.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, on the leader motion to amend, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McFarland. Ms. Fierzowski.
Mr. Chair and members, the next issue is what I call less than full year vehicle registration. And the language in question appears on R3334. On the House side, it's line 21.8. Begins there, and the language that we're looking at is the language from 21.13 to 21.21 that exists on the House side and not on the Senate side. And the differences, okay, current law allows vehicle registration for less than 1 year for vehicles that are owned by motor vehicle lessors. The House changes that, first of all, so that only vehicles that are leased or rented for periods not more than 28 days are entitled to this less than 1 year registration provision. And it establishes a system by which the registrar would stamp in red on the title certificate the expiration month for the less than 1 year registration. And by doing this, and perhaps the department could verify this, my understanding is that the legislature would not have to impose the $10 administrative fee that is in both the House and the Senate language on R79. So there's a $10 administrative fee that is associated with the current way of tracking and processing these less than 1 year vehicle registrations. So the House change would allow the department to do this without needing that $10 additional fee.
Okay, Ms. Pierzowski, it was my understanding that the department preferred the House language. Ms. McCormick, can you come to the table, please? Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I believe there's something, either an amendment that I don't have with me, but I think someone has suggested an amendment where it deletes the fee. Is that on this particular portion, too?
Yes.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, Driver and Vehicle Services Director. And yes, the division has been working with affected parties, and we think this would meet the goal of this proposal, which is to have the work be done more through the deputy registrars and less manual work that is currently required by department staff in terms of managing partial pay registration for leased vehicles. And so we do support the language change that was made in the House version of the bill.
Okay, and Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, again, thank you. Ms. McCormick, maybe I'm confusing with another issue with registration on short-term or part-time. Does the automobile dealers, is there something that they become involved with? Is that strictly in this where it's less than a 30-day period on a leased vehicle for plates? Is that this particular portion right here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, I don't think that's the proposal. I think you're talking about the additional $10 fee that would be required, and I think we wanted to make sure that was eliminated in the language as well, and I think that's what Ms. Berezovsky was explaining. Mm-hmm. That isn't the same proposal, I don't think.
Right. We're talking about the administrative fee for this, and it and you've clearly indicated that if the House language was accepted, the $10 fee would go away.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think there's, let me, give me just a minute to find it. There is one other provision, but it isn't a department provision.
Yeah.
Is that back on R-79 then?
No, R-79 is this provision.
Okay.
It's the $10 fee that's associated with this provision. So if the conference committee wanted to accept the House proposal, it should also eliminate that second House reference on R-79 to the $10 fee. That should not have been included along with the changed statutory language. If that makes sense.
Okay, so that if Representative Leader was to make a motion, it would be for the House language minus the $10 fee.
Would be, right, the House language on 3334, mm-hmm. and then delete either the House or the Senate language on, or both, actually, on R-79.
Okay.
That's referenced here on the sheet.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that the House language from R38.5 through R38.2 be recommended or passed in this part. And less than $10 deletion, right? Is that the right number there?
No, this is the part that needs to be, this is the reference to $10. These two right here, this is the one.
Oh, I want to get all the way to the top of it. I need both of them. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, members. Actually, I move that House language in 21.8 through 21.30 and also 38.5 through 38.2, less the $10, which we have, that's the reference mm-hmm. in there, so that's okay.
Well,
that be adopted, right?
Representative Leader, the motion, we should adopt the House language on 21.8 through 21.3, and then we'll delete both the House and Senate provisions underneath that on R-79, and that gets rid of the $10 fee. Is that right, Ms. Berezovsky?
Yes, delete that second fee and adopt the first fee.
Okay, I think we have it right now for the record. Then Representative Leader moves the House language on R-33 and 34, lines 21.8 through 21.30, and to strike the House and Senate provisions on R-79 in reference to the administrative fees. Further, Representative Moore?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is a question for Council. I'm looking at 38.4 on R-79. And it's a reference to for a period of four or more months. And my question is, I just want to make sure I'm understanding that when I look back at the earlier provision, is for a period not to exceed 28 days. it's just the difference in the two time periods. I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing by taking it out.
Ms. Pierzowski.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative, could you please tell me which line you're looking at?
On line, on page R79, lines 38.3 in the House version, 38.4.
Oh, right.
You'll see four or more months.
Right. That is the that's the less than 1 year registration period.
Mm-hmm. So it'll still be consistent, even though we're referencing 28 days.
28 days is the lease period. It's the, okay. the maximum lease okay. period for the vehicle to qualify for the 4 month registration.
Okay, great. On the leader motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Ms. Spierzowski.
Mr. Chair and members, the next issue is the county wheelage tax. And probably you wouldn't be, well, I don't know, you might be adopting language, but there's one policy difference. There are some technical differences as well. So the technical differences would still have to be worked out. But I believe that the only policy difference in there is in the description of the vehicles that are subject to wheelage tax. And on my little sheet here, I made a mistake. It's how the house exempt from the wheelage tax trucks and tractors in excess of 26,000 pounds that are subject to the gross weight registration tax. Those are exempt mm-hmm. from wheelage tax, and the Senate does not exempt those vehicles.
Okay, well then let's deal with that that issue first. And Representative Leader, do you remember this issue? Okay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the reason the House exempted 26,000 gross and above is the fact that it appears there's some problem as administration with trucks where they're domiciled differently than one location. Maybe they could speak to that issue, but that was a problem on administrating the wheelage tax.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, everybody thinks the wheelage tax is per wheel, and it isn't for trucks. We should just comment that's per unit. But that was part of the issue, and I believe maybe they, Mr. Estes could testify to that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeremy Estenson with the Trucking Association, and Representative Leader is right. The concern that we had is primarily administrative. If, for instance, a trucking company has an address in a business location in County A that perhaps charges a wheelage tax but houses its trucks all over the state of Minnesota and perhaps in other states, then would they be responsible to pay wheelage taxes on all of their trucks, on some of the trucks that drive through County A occasionally? There's some confusion there. And the converse would be maybe worse as far as the state or the county is concerned. Otherwise, you know, besides administrative issues, we had some concerns about economic development and perhaps some of the fairness issues as well. I mean, would this tax drive these mobile businesses just 20 miles across a county line or something like that as well?
Mm-hmm. Did the department want to weigh in at all? They say no. Did the counties want to weigh in at all? Ms. Loveroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Loveroe with the Association of Counties, and we are in opposition to that portion of the House bill. Mm-hmm. We feel that all users of the road should pay, and especially those vehicles that are so heavy because they do more damage.
Thank you. I think that we had talked with the department about the wheelage tax several times, and if my memory is any good at all, sometimes it's not, but when we had those discussions, it seemed like the department was at first very concerned about how that would be administered, and that is the reason why this in the Senate bill we set the wheelage tax at a fixed amount instead of having it be kind of fluctuating in $5 increments or whatever, and let the county boards decide. If they want $5, that's fine. 15 is okay. The departments, and this kind of goes along with what Mr. Assistant was saying, was that saw some areas where they were going to have a little bit of a problem administering that if it was different rates all over the place, because if you've got three kids and two of them are in college and those cars are in one in Carlton County and the other one in, I don't know, Goodhue, and you guys live in, I don't know, out in Minnetonka, you know, they're kind of flipping a coin as to, you know, how they were going to get it all taken care of. But I believe that Ms. McCormick had told us that they figured a way to kind of take care of that as long as the fee was the same. And she's shaking her head yes. So this might be one of these issues where we have to wrestle, have a little arm wrestling match over. So. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand Mr. Estenson's argument in those instances where you know, the address may be in a particular county, but the fleet is housed all over the place. But wondering if Mr. Estenson could respond to, or someone, or Ms. Leverell could respond, what about, or that's not the case, part of the address is actually where the depot is, and all the trucks are there, and they're using those county roads quite a bit. I mean, is there a way to administratively distinguish between those two different cases?
Mr. Chair, for the counties that have already implemented the wheelage tax, it is where that vehicle is domiciled.
Okay.
I don't want to make it sound like the Senate is completely opposed to this, because we have made allowances for fleeted vehicles in the past as in different areas, and this doesn't, you know, it doesn't go contrary to what we've done in the past. So, Mr. Estenson.
Mr. Chair, I don't think our members are aware of any sort of system that would account for vehicles, let's say, that are local routes that may do their driving, which is maybe the spirit of the piece of legislation here, as opposed to those who do long-haul driving, so they drive very few miles in those counties. And if there is a system, I guess it's our membership just isn't aware of it. And for what it's worth, in the 2005 bill, this these 26,000-pound and up vehicles were exempt as well.
Representative
Leader. Oh, Mr. I wasn't referring specifically to local routes. I was talking about where trucks are parked. You know, they would obviously use those county roads.
Yeah.
Where they are. And that's where they they're located. I mean, that's the notion. Just like with the residential fee payer, you know, they may sleep in their bedroom community, but you know, go to work in a neighboring county. So.
Yeah. Ms. McCormick, did you have something to add? Representative Leader.
Mr. Essenson, first, apparently though in a truck terminal, sometimes you leave your trailers and your tractors are in different locations. You just pick up your trailers. Is it your presumption then, if we have a wheelage tax, that you'd be normally the trailers would be domiciled at the terminal, and that you'd be paying at the terminal if it's located here and the tractor is somewhere else? That would create a little problem?
It certainly could, Mr. Chair, Representative Leader. And in many cases, operations like that, frequently the trailers aren't parked all that often. They may be in Chicago or Minneapolis or various other places all the time. So I'm not sure if that really answers your question, but certainly that would create some additional problems.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, do we have any idea how much money we're talking about, you know, in a time of limited resources? How much money, if we were to allow them to charge the wheelage tax, would be on the table?
Mr. Chair, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that one of the counties told me that sometimes $1 million or $2 million, I might be wrong, and maybe Representative Earhart knows, but basically, my understanding, I believe it was Ramsey or Dakota, said they get somewhere between $1 million or $2 million on wheelage tax.
Just, and Representative Leader, that was just from the trucks?
No, annually, what they have.
Oh, okay.
Counties have it now.
I was going to say just from trucks.
Mr. Chair, I was asking about the additional incremental from this particular.
Right. Mm-hmm. Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, why is a domicile, why is a registration a better measure of... I'm going to assume that if one county doesn't charge this, that not every truck in the state is going to be domiciled. In fact, I would think if you see a flight to one county, they're going to charge the fee. So why isn't registration a better measure?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I ask Mr. Estenson, on a fleet, where do you register your vehicles? With the terminal at the fleet, or are you just... I think there's some kind of differential as far as where they register their truck fleets, too, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, the example I gave in the beginning where you may have a building, an office location in Dakota County, but house your trucks all over the United States, some in Minnesota, you would register all of those vehicles in Dakota County, Minnesota, regardless of whether or not any trucks actually come to that location.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
It's hard to make a fully informed decision without an answer to Senator Bonnell's question. I don't know if finance has done any sort of a fiscal note on this exemption language, or we have an idea how much money we're taking off the table by allowing this exemption.
Ms. McCormick, there's been a couple questions here. I think we're going to probably just set this one aside for the time being, but is there a way that you could possibly find out what kind of money we were talking about, maybe in like Dakota County, who already has it, and how much money it is if we included the truckers versus not? Included this, I should say, specifically to this provision of over $26,000.
Mr. Chair and members, I think we can do it, but I'm not sure, and it would involve a programming request. That would be the only way we'd be able to identify it. So I'll need to go back and talk with staff. It wouldn't be something I could get done by tomorrow, I don't think, but I'll see what we can do for you. Because of the type of mainframe system we have, if we're trying to access that kind of information, we have to write a quick program in order to figure out what kind of vehicles we're talking about. If we're looking at one county where we do it right now, since we haven't been doing it for an entire year, it would be hard to, we may be able to give you a sample of what we do in 1 month in the three counties that we're collecting it from. But even it'll take a little bit of time for us to do that type of calculation. But we can get it to you as soon as possible.
Okay, Ms. McCormick, if you guys can get that done without having to jump through too many hoops, we'd appreciate it. Did your division have a request for a new mainframe system anytime in the last, 20 years? Because we've been fighting your mainframe for a long time, and every time I go down to get my tabs, and they know who I am there, they mention that sometimes they have to wait for extended periods of time to get a response.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've only been with the division for 7 years, and we have not had a request in for that in that time. I was wondering, though, in not trying to switch the subject or anything, Mr. Chair, but I was wanting to clarify the information you mentioned about the wheelage tax and our how we collected in the three counties that we're doing it right now. Mm-hmm. We are now requesting, as part of all registration renewals, that anyone that's renewing their registration identifies the county where the vehicle is kept. So it's not where the person registered it, but it's where the vehicle is kept. And so the same would be true with commercial vehicles as well. If they were kept in that county, and that would be what then they would have to identify the county, and if they charge a wheelage tax, they would have to pay it. So we will look at what you are requesting. But I also wanted to point out to the committee that while we said, yes, it wouldn't be very difficult for us to do anything other than charge one standard fee, so because we for the entire state, if we're collecting wheelage taxes on behalf of every county, the department has been clear in its fiscal note that we would not be able to do any more than just the metropolitan counties that we now have our system programmed for until we would not be able to make that effective until 2010 in order to get the programming done that we would need. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure that members had seen that as part of our fiscal note.
And Ms. McCormick, and that is if we fluctuate the let the price go between $5 and $20 or $25.
Mr. Chair, no, that's any way at all, and a lot of it has to do with financial reporting and the fact that there has to be clear financial reporting of all these various counties, and right now there isn't. Additional space has to be provided in terms of adding that many additional counties to the system, our information system.
Okay.
So.
All right.
But we'll get you that information as soon as possible.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick, when you were talking about the place of registry versus the place where it's kept or domiciled, do you keep a separate field and maintain a field for that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, yes, that was part of the programming that we needed to do in order to start administering the wheelage tax. And so we decided that the only way to be able to do it would be to create that field on our system so that we're collecting it for the entire state now so that we can manage that information. We won't have to keep asking it unless they want to change the county that the vehicle is kept in, the owner does, when they renew their registration.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. McCormick, then is that field always a in-state location, or might it be an out-of-state location?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, we would only be listing the counties that are within the state.
Senator Devils.
Thanks. Ms. McCormick, how is that information reported? Is it self-reported? And is it reported on a form, or do we report it when we renew our... I just don't remember. Maybe I report it, but I don't remember doing that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, well, we just started doing it with our DISA in December. And so if you haven't registered this year, you wouldn't have it. But when you do register, it is required as part of our registration process.
Interesting. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, and I guess I was just going to add that I think that... we should maybe look for language that would help clarify where the vehicle is kept, because it seems to me that we want the trucks, which are especially heavy vehicles, obviously, to contribute to this fund to help help fund the county road. So, you know, I understand what the Trucking Association is saying, where it can be confusing, but hopefully we could work on that language to help come to some resolution to find a way to include them so that they do pay the wheelage tax, given the special wear and tear they have on our county roads.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to be neutral on this, but I recognize you have your county full of trucks. But the problem is, most of the time, they're traveling not on local roads, and that's where the wheelage tax goes. the wheelage tax does not go to, I think, to MnDOT or Trunk Highways. It's strictly for local city and streets.
Right, and I think that Ms. Backus came to the table to tell us that. Is that
actually, I did have a couple other points, and not to prolong the debate. Amber Backus, Leonard Street and Diner, and also working with the Minnesota Trucking Association. Part of this is an equity issue, because in Dakota County, which has decided to leverage this, you have companies that are registered in Minnesota, base plate their trucks in Minnesota, and would be charged this. But right down the road, you might have another company with a huge truck yard with a few hundred trucks, but actually all their trucks are registered in Illinois. They would not be subject to this because their vehicles aren't registered in Minnesota. So there's an equity issue, even for trucking companies located within the same location. Then there are also concerns if you had a fleet of 1,000 vehicles and now you're going to be paying $20,000 a year in wheelage taxes, you might decide just to base plate your trucks altogether in another state, and then there's lots of revenue to the state for motor vehicle sales taxes and other things that the trucking industry is paying if it gets to be significant enough with a large enough fleet.
Anything else, Ms. Backus, before we let Mr. Senator Dibble?
Well, I think Ms. Backus just raised the issue and a problem, frankly. And I just wanted to respond to, I want to support Senator Stevens' comment, and it kind of goes to the issue that perhaps now Ms. Backus has put on our radar, which I don't know if she really wants us to be focused on a bunch of trucks in Minnesota that are registered in Illinois that are beating on our roads that aren't contributing to that wear and tear. But in the metro area, Representative Leader, a lot of our county roads are the major arterials, and the trucks are on those county roads. It's not just the state highways. So I think Senator Stevens' point is well taken.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what neck of the woods you're from. I know down in ours that most of the trucking outfits are located within just blocks of a highway, a state trunk highway. But in the metropolitan area, that's not the case.
Mr. Chair, you can't sometimes distinguish in the metro between a state highway and a county road just by looking at it.
Yeah, they're all
in function. Yeah, exactly. And worn out.
Mr. Tilley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. And Dakota is one of the three counties that put the current wheelage tax into place. We would oppose the exclusion of trucks under this. Number one, we think it sends exactly the wrong message to all the other people out in the county, in Dakota specifically, that has to pay their $5. And were they now to find out that the trucks that are always in front of them on the roads, on our very congested roads, would be exempt from it, I think that politically this is exactly the wrong thing to do. Secondly, the current mechanism, and I've gotten the forms in the mail, Ms. McCormick has already explained, if you have an option to designate where your other vehicles are domiciled, if it's not in Dakota County, and then you don't have to pay the tax. For instance, if you have a lake cabin in Wisconsin or northern Minnesota where you leave a vehicle, you have that opportunity now to exempt yourself from the tax, and we're comfortable with the administration of that. And very frankly, if this drives more trucks to other parts of Minnesota, then Dakota County, that wouldn't hurt our citizens' feelings too bad. But we think trucking organizations are pretty straight up. We don't think they're doing anything illegal. They're certainly a major part of our economy. But if they are domiciled in Dakota County, we want them to pay the wheelage tax. If they are domiciled in another county, and that's fine with us if they want to pay the wheelage tax there. But we think trucks as a major part of the transportation system should be willing to pay these wheelage tax fees, as do all of the other citizens that live in our counties. Thank you.
Representative Horstein.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Philly, I mean, I agree with you. I think that the exclusion of trucks does send the wrong message. But, you know, my concern is, are we going to then just have a mass exodus of, you know, domiciling trucks somewhere else? I mean, I wish that wouldn't happen. It seems like it would. So I'm sort of in a quandary. I mean, the bottom line is, let's try to maximize the revenue we can get from the wheelage tax wherever we can get it from. But I wonder if that's maybe an unintended consequence here. I'm not sure.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not an expert in motor vehicle registration, but it seems to me that there must be a mechanism to make sure that vehicles that are using our roads are registered in Minnesota to use our roads. When we go to rent a car, those rental cars, I think, almost always have Minnesota plates on. If they didn't have Minnesota plates on them, I think we should raise that issue. The same way with our trucking firms. We understand the nature of the trucking business, that trucks come and go, but there should be some sort of representation in our vehicle registration for trucks that operate in and out of Minnesota. So if there is not a mechanism, I hope there is. There should be one.
Ms. Backus.
And just to clarify, there is that mechanism. There are two national programs, the International Registration Program and the International Fuel Tax Agreement, that even if you aren't based here, if you run through here, you're still going to pay a percentage of those taxes based on the miles you operate in the state. Mm-hmm. But those are agreements that have been long worked out and hard to get to. And this adds another layer, though, to that with the wheelage tax and additional costs just for Minnesota trucking companies. And that's the concern.
And as I said earlier, we've treated fleeted vehicles a little differently than you know, our personal vehicles or whatever. But and we've done it for several different reasons. The last time that I was involved, it dealt with some like National or Avis, those types of vehicles that are fleeted, and some registration mechanisms so that they didn't have to pay an ungodly amount of money, because we'd hate for those rental car companies to pick up their business over at the airport and move 100 miles to the east and then rent cars to people coming into our airport from Wisconsin. So I can see kind of the same thing happening with the trucks, but then again, we all know that trucks do more damage than anything else out there. So, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I had a conversation a couple of days ago with someone who used to represent rental car companies, and what she said is that rental car companies are not required to plate in Minnesota. Is there anyone that can answer that question?
Well, Senator Carlson, they're not required to, but the car companies that have an address at the airport, then those companies do.
They do.
Right. Yes. But sometimes you see leased cars, rental cars, and you see an awful lot of truck trailers that have out-of-state plates. And, that's just the nature of their business with the way that they move cars and trucks back and forth and do their hauls, especially for the trucking industry. So you get a mixture of all these vehicles from all over the place.
Well, Mr. Chair, I specifically asked that question, is if they were required to plate in Minnesota, and the answer was no. And my anecdote was that I have, in my travels, have driven a lot of rental cars, and a lot of times they're plated in Oregon, and even drove a car that had 200 miles on it in Omaha, Nebraska, and it was plated in Oregon.
Hmm.
And you see a lot of rental cars around here that have Oregon plates.
Well, I think that we'll now Ms. Backus opened up another can of worms. So we'll have our councils kind of look through some of this and figure out exactly what it is that we need to do. But I think for us, for today, we should probably set this issue aside, and we'll kind of talk about it a little bit more and figure it out over the next couple of days. But Representative Ortman.
I just have a brief comment, Mr. Chair. This conversation about the shortcomings of the wheelage tax bring to light the assets of the gas tax as a user fee, because those trucks that are domiciled in Illinois, if they're driving on our road, are paying our gas tax.
Mm-hmm. Right. For those trucking outfits, their mileage going through the state is all, that's part of what Ms. Backus was talking about, that kind of at the end of the year, everybody divvies up what they owe to every different state. So it kind of works out in the end, I suppose. Well, let's move on to the, I think we had one other. And this was, there's two others?
Well, it's a separate document.
Right?
This is a separate document. One more.
Oh, okay. Okay, there's two more. There's this graphic design license plate, and Ms. Pierzowski has some, or Krista does, I'm sorry, has some issues with the spreadsheet in regards to the CASA. So, Ms. Pierzowski, maybe you can help us with the graphic, the differences in the license plate provisions.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, on on page R80, on the House side, there's language stricken beginning at 38.28. That is not stricken in the Senate language. And that language would remove a limitation that's in current law that would limit the issuance of graphic design license plates to passenger automobiles, ambulances, hearses, and pickup trucks registered under the monthly series system of registration and recreational vehicles. The Senate does not remove that limitation.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. Pierzowski, can you kind of tell us exactly what that means? I mean, the these are, well, if you could kind of help us. Okay, well, Ms. McCormick, you're getting your exercise running up and down those stairs. And members, we're gonna hurry through this one right here because the House needs to go someplace in about 3 minutes. So,
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the legislation within our proposal really is trying to get us ready for the time when the department will be able to go to a flat plate system. At this particular time, we only have certain plates that we do with the flat plate technology, and so this is just while we were making the changes and setting our fees accordingly to be able to get ready for moving at some point in the future to a flat plate system, which, as you know, we have an agreement with MinCor to assist us in our plate production. They are just starting to use that technology on some of our plates, and so this language change would allow us then to be able to use flat plates on more than just passenger vehicles. So that's why I don't understand why it didn't make it. It was part of our budget proposal, why the language wasn't in both proposals. But
which one?
It may have just been a technical error or something.
Okay, so so Ms. McCormick, then the House language is a preferable language that, okay.
Yes, thank you.
All right. I think we understand that, and I know which direction you're going in, and how that got dropped out was I'll take responsibility. So if that's all I got to confess to today, I'm doing pretty good. with that, Representative Leader would move the House language on R80 lines, 38.22 through 38.32. Oh, okay. I see what it is. Okay, so Representative Leader moves the House language on R79 through 82, 3821 through 3919. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Members, we're going to go ahead and adjourn now the House, and I guess we have a special guest as well that we were supposed to go see. Representative Leader? Representative Leader, 8 o'clock Saturday.
You should maybe pull the members quick.
I don't know. They all look like they had a bad taste in their mouth when you said 8 o'clock.
I thought you said Friday.
Let's just say 9 o'clock, and Miss Main can bring the donuts. So. All right? Okay, we're adjourned until 9 a.m. Saturday.
I know, I like 9.